It's not Wednesday, it's Thursday. Bit of a scheduling change this week, but it is still time for the show, Graham. Adam Alter from the Razorback Nation here alongside Chris Bond of Arkansas Sports 360. And maybe it's a good thing we changed our schedule because the Hogs have a win, Chris.
It's amazing. In fact, that's why we're a little delayed. We've been spending an extra day just celebrating the excitement of Arkansas 24, Auburn 7.
Yeah, running around waving a shirt, you know, being crazy.
Waving a shirt.
Yeah.
Did you see the, this has nothing to do with anything, did you see the fat North Carolina State fan?
I did, on the poll?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what we've been doing all week.
Pretty much, pretty much. And what was interesting was I was reading a Pat Forty column, and he linked to a Arkansas fan from last year who happened to be hefty and shirtless celebrating.
I think his name is Peyton, and he follows me on Twitter.
So,
what up, chubby shirtless dude?
All right. Well, let's talk about that win over Auburn. What was your main takeaway?
That there's a little bit of optimism now with this team.
Mm-hmm.
That the defense in the right situation can be decent. And, you know, that the offense can – they were just efficient. They didn't do anything spectacular, but they were able to score just enough to win. And so, I mean, it was a good victory. It wasn't great.
Yeah.
The Paul Petrino move, I think, helped them a little bit.
Totally agree. My main takeaways were twofold. One, Auburn's really bad, particularly on offense. That is a bad football team. And I think Gene Chizik is legitimately on the hot seat, even this far removed from a national championship, just a couple of years, because I think he's now 22-33 without Cam Newton.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to win an SEC game all year, to be honest. And two, and you kind of touched on this a little bit, it's amazing how one win can change your perception of this football team. You know, I said on our game day show Saturday morning in our predictions, Aaron Peters picked Arkansas to win, and I picked Auburn because I said, until this team shows me a win, I just don't have any confidence picking them to win. Well, they've shown us a win now, and it changes the way I feel about these next coming games against lower-tier opponents.
Yeah, I kind of couched myself. I covered myself last week because I wrote early last week, there was a possibility, and I think we discussed it on the show, Graham, Arkansas could be 5-4 going into South Carolina. If you wanted to take a really optimistic view, there was a chance that could happen. However, I, too, picked against Arkansas for a variety of reasons, but mostly because I wanted to see them win before I felt comfortable picking them to win. Well, guess what? I feel comfortable picking them to win here and there over
– against the right opponent.
Right.
I feel comfortable picking them to win this Saturday. I'm going to go ahead and throw that out there right now. I'm picking Arkansas to beat Kentucky. I feel like they, you know, how Stella got their groove back here just a little bit, you know, and they're going to be playing at home for the first time in a couple of weeks. And, you know, Kentucky's, you know, not any better than Auburn. So I feel like they're going to win.
I think that's putting it politely, that Kentucky is not any better than Auburn.
You think they're significantly worse than Auburn?
That may be one of the more complimentary things I've ever heard you say.
So you think Kentucky is noticeably worse than Auburn?
Yeah, I think this is a really, really bad football.
Because Auburn was pretty stinking bad.
Yeah, but, you know, I think the collection of talent that Auburn has, I think there's some talent there. I just think they have some other issues, coaching and play calling and leadership within the team. Talent-wise, I think Auburn is sufficiently better than Kentucky.
This game this weekend is kind of fascinating from a coaching perspective, because could you get two more coaches that are just dead men walking in their current positions? John L. Smith and Joker Phillips.
Yeah, I mean both of these guys will be looking for employment elsewhere after this season. So that certainly lends another layer to this week's game, which I don't expect is going to be a particularly well-played game, much like last week.
I was going to say, did you find the Auburn game to be a well-played game? Because it was mediocre at best, in my opinion.
It was everything I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Particularly late second quarter, third quarter. It was the pillow fight we all kind of expected.
Yeah, that got real slow. I actually dozed off for a few minutes watching on my couch. Go ahead.
But I was going to say, I mean, again, you know, the win gives them some momentum. It provides Arkansas with a little bit of optimism.
You could just see it in their faces when we came in with our first media session on Monday and then again on Tuesday. I mean, they just feel so much better about themselves now.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun watching them after the game gather and sing with the, you know, couple thousand Arkansas mm-hmm, fans that were mm-hmm. there and ringing the bell as they went into the locker room vigorously. I mean, you really it was a celebration that you would have seen a couple years, like in 2010 when they beat Georgia on the road. That was the kind of celebration that this was.
Yeah.
I mean, you really thought they had accomplished something.
It's interesting that you compare it to that Georgia game a couple years ago, because that was a pivotal game in that season, because up until then, Arkansas under Bobby Petrino in this system had not been very effective on the road.
Yeah.
So getting that win against a pretty good Georgia team in a hostile environment really catapulted them into what turned out to be a 10-win season. Now, they obviously can't get to 10 wins this year, but it might have a similar effect where it just kind of, you know, flips the script a little bit and the Hogs just play better football going forward. But let me preface this with a but. Now, I don't want to poop all over everything, because it is good that they did get a win, you know, on the road in convincing fashion. But I am not nearly convinced this defense is as much better as it looks like they played in the stat sheet, with 8 sacks and 5 turnovers and only 7 points allowed. That was a lot of smoke and mirrors to me.
Yes.
When I watched that game, I thought a lot of that was the effect of Auburn's pair of terrible quarterbacks. They missed quite a bit of open receivers, particularly on deep balls where Arkansas's defender had been beat, and it was a touchdown if the throw was anywhere close to on the money.
Yeah, I mean, we need a dose of realism here, and I think that's something that, if nothing else, that's something you and I bring to the table, is I think we both have very realistic outlooks. This was an encouraging game. This is something that Arkansas can build on, but if you suddenly expect that every defensive performance is now going to be like this, and they're just going to wreak havoc on quarterbacks and force turnovers, you know, then you probably also think John Gruden will be the next coach at Arkansas.
Well, he keeps wearing a red tie on Monday Night Football. One of my most recent Twitter followers is called John Gruden's Tie.
Yes, yes.
It has come to this, Chris. But we're veering off topic here.
Yeah, so, but point being, yeah, this was, can they have another good performance? Sure.
Absolutely.
Will they have a game where they can get to the quarterback a couple times? Perhaps. I mean, this is definitely the kind of game that Trey Flowers could use as a springboard. We had heard all through fall camp how good he was and how high hopes they had for him. We really hadn't seen it until Auburn. So, sure, this is something he can build on. I think even though they got beat a few times, there were also plays where the freshman corners, created sacks because of their coverage.
There were definitely one or two flat-out coverage sacks of the 8.
So Will Hines and Davion McKinney can take and build some confidence off of that. So certainly I think there are things they can build on, but I'm with you. I think people need to realize this is probably the exception rather than the rule going forward.
Yeah, obviously, 8 sacks, 5 turnovers, 7 points allowed. Those are both very high-end marks as far as what a defense is looking for. I mean, I don't remember what they are, but 8 sacks is the most by this program in quite a bit of time.
Since 2000, I think.
Yeah, 5 turnovers, the most by this program. I mean, you're not going to match these high marks. But I want to touch on Hines and McKinney since you brought them into the conversation. I think those guys have great potential when I watch them play, particularly from a size standpoint. Davion McKinney is huge for a cornerback. He's like 6'1". Maybe somewhere in the 185 to 200 range. Hines is maybe an inch shorter and a few pounds lighter. But big cornerbacks are hard to find. And these guys you know, like I said, have great potential going forward. They're still going to have some growing pains, particularly this season, because it looks like they're going to be the starters going forward, even with Tevin Mitchell back and Kalen Kellybrew back, although I do assume Mitchell will resume one of those starting roles probably after the bye week. But I like to look at these kids.
Definitely. McKinney, by the way, is 6'3".
What?
Yeah, 6'3", 190.
That's enormous for a cornerback.
And that's why they wanted him there, was, and he's got this tremendous wingspan, too.
Hines is 6'1". Yeah. I knew one of them was 6'1".
And Hines is good size as well.
Yeah.
6'1", 185, probably 190. Those guys give them some athleticism, and they're aggressive.
Yes, they're not afraid of contact. They stick their nose in there. They don't always wrap up. They're still learning that lesson, but they got their nose in there.
You know, I mean, I gave McKinney a little bit of grief a couple weeks ago because he like ran full speed into Johnny Manziel and just kind of bounced off of him.
Yeah, like a pinball.
It looked hilarious, but it was actually one of the more aggressive plays we've seen from a corner in a long, long time. And so I just think those guys have a lot of potential, and they have room to build. And then their development allows, you know, they're playing Kellybrew some at safety in practice this week. So it's allowing them to move some guys around and make some changes maybe defensively position-wise that can help them going forward. So the development of those two kids is huge for this defense.
That's probably a good idea, looking at Kellybrew at safety, because they're so thin there now with you know, Bennett having a hard time staying healthy. And you know, Gaines is a freshman, but he's coming along. But, you know, Alan Turner probably shouldn't be out there. I mean, he's a product of the thinness and the injuries right now. But one thing I really hope this defense takes away from this game going forward, and more specifically Paul Haynes, is bring more pressure. This is something people have been calling for. I know we've been calling for it in the Razorback Nation on the air with our content. When you have a weak secondary, you can't leave them out there and expect them to cover for long periods of time. Bring some heat.
Yep.
It worked.
Yeah, and you defensively, they're not going to outman people at the corner spot, at the linebacker spot. So they need to make up for that in other ways. They haven't experienced enough defensive line and athletic enough that they can do some things and bring some pressure. So that was nice to see. And it was good to see them continue to be aggressive in the second half. And somebody asked Paul Haynes, did you think about slowing down with the pressure once y'all got the lead? And he was like, heck no. I told those guys, just let me continue to get after them. And they did it. And so the defense had, without question, its best game of the season.
Yes, absolutely. We're in agreement there. So let's flip to the other side of the ball. Because you have a strong opinion here on Tyler Wilson that I'm not sure I agree with, but I want you to convince me, so go ahead.
This was, I'm not going to say the best game of his career, but this was Tyler Wilson's best game of the season.
Whoa. That's not what you said coming in. You said best game of his career.
No, I didn't say best game of his career.
I thought I heard you say best game of his career.
No. This was the best game of the season. This was one of the best games of his career. And that sounds insane because we're talking about him passing for 256 yards. No, he didn't even pass for that.
No, not even that many.
No,
he
didn't.
It was 230, I think.
He passed for 230 yards and no touchdowns. And I am willing to say this is one of his best games in his career, the best one this season.
Okay, explain yourself.
He channeled his inner A.J. McCarron. He was just he wasn't spectacular. He was just steady. He was very efficient. He completed over 75% of his passes, which is this is where I think you got best of career out of me earlier. This was the highest completion percentage in his career
as a
starting quarterback.
Yeah.
He went 4 of 5 for 80% against UTEP a few years ago, which you or I could have done. So
probably,
but as a starter, 75% of his passes, he was very patient, which is something he talked about entering the week. He wanted to be more patient. If there was a 3-yard play on second down, he was going to go for the 3-yard play instead of trying to force the 30-yard play. And he was able to go turnover free for the first time this season.
Yes.
Did not put them in bad positions. And essentially, for the most part, kept them ahead in terms of down and distance, and got them in favorable positions, and they win. And I just – I thought what he was able to do was pretty remarkable.
Let me get your opinion on this because I hear you're kind of dancing around. You feel like he's a quarterback that has a strong history of forcing throws he shouldn't make. Now, while I agree he has made throws he shouldn't make, particularly I'm thinking of the two interceptions in the A&M game, but obviously that game was – they were far behind. He was just trying to make anything happen with no semblance of a running game and whatnot. I feel like in competitive games or games that they're winning, I don't feel like Tyler's a forcer. Now, I know he's got a lot of Brett Favre in him and he likes to throw on the run and throw from different arm angles, but there's a difference between that and forcing throws. What's your take on Tyler there?
It's not necessarily the number of interceptions. Like, he threw 7 interceptions all of last year, which for the number of touchdowns, and I'm trying to get that in front of me right now, it's not the number of interceptions, although this year – this
too many this year, for sure.
There were too many this year. It's the incomplete passes in some situations where, again, he could just take the – make a 5-yard completion, let the back or the receiver try to get some yards after the catch instead of trying to force things that aren't there or instead of throwing it out of bounds. It's easy to sit here and criticize a quarterback, but this is based on the conversations I've had with Tyler. Sometimes the smart play, if you're under pressure, is to throw the ball out of bounds.
Yes.
Avoid the sack, avoid the interception. Sometimes the smart play is for the sure thing, the 5-yard play.
The check down.
Tyler has not always been really good at doing that. And so I thought he did that on Saturday against Auburn. There were other factors. The fact they were able to run the football helped him. But that some of that was him getting them into the running plays instead of trying to force something that wasn't there. I just thought it was a very efficient game. I'm much more of a fan when Tyler is channeling Brett Favre or Eli Manning. And is making,
improvising?
Yeah. But it was nice to see him be able to kind of channel – someone else and just manage the game and be efficient. And so I thought it was a remarkable thing because I don't think that's not his nature.
You've got me thinking here now because I'm thinking back to when Mallett was the quarterback in this system and he forced more throws than Tyler without question, in my opinion. You're shaking your head. You disagree? You think he forced less throws than Tyler?
Mallett also got greedy at times.
I think he forced more throws. I feel like he did.
There were times that he but Mallett was also better at getting them in and out of plays at the line of scrimmage where he could get them into a more favorable play.
You think he was better than that than Tyler is?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's what I was getting at. He was also reluctant for the check down. You know, and would love to make the big play. You think that's a product of this system and this Petrino coaching style? You know, they make so much emphasis about being in the right play and hitting the home run, you know, as many times as possible that it just makes their quarterback reluctant to throw the check down?
Well, when you have the weapons around them, especially when Mallett was here, you know, when you had Joe and Jarius and
Greg in his prime,
yeah,
who was
Nile,
unreal.
Nile was running the way he was running. DJ Williams. I mean, you had a lot of home run threats, and then you had the deep threats too with Joe and Jarius. So, and Greg and on and on. So yeah, I mean, I think having those guys around you, the system, I think that lends itself to you trying to create a big play every time. But Arkansas, that kind of goes back to what I'm saying with Tyler this year, and I think it helps me make the point I'm trying to make, which who knows what that is. But he doesn't have those weapons around him this year, so he's got to be more efficient, more of a game manager. He doesn't have a home run threat really. You know,
besides
Kobe.
Yeah.
So he really, I mean, he needs to be more of an efficient guy. And not try to go for the big play. And, I mean, being a quarterback is all about putting your team in the best position to win. Tyler did that last week without throwing a single touchdown, which seems really odd, but He did exactly what they needed him to do.
Not to toot my own horn, but I'm going to toot my own horn here.
Please.
I was the one asking the questions in the preseason about this offense is not going to be the bombs and the deep threats. I mean, they just don't have it. I mean, other than Kobe, and even the long ones he's made have been more catch and run than let's throw the ball 40 yards and you be on the other end of it. There's nobody that really stretches the field. I mean, Brandon Mitchell's a great athlete, but he's a possession receiver. You know, Mikhail McKay is a true freshman, but he's a possession receiver. You know, the other guys, Horton, Herndon, I don't see them consistently making 60-yard plays. But that's beside the point. It doesn't mean you can't win, you know, as long as the quarterback is reading the play correctly, throwing to the open man, and checking down when there's nothing else there, which is exactly what Tyler did on Saturday.
Yeah. And I'm – yes. And if nothing else, I was more impressed by that than maybe a 5-touchdown, 3-interception game. Although those are much more fun to watch.
They can be. They can be. Of course, a good running game is always a quarterback's best friend. Hogshead, it wasn't the most yards, but it was arguably their best rushing performance of the season. And it wasn't Nile Davis. It was Dennis Johnson. He had, I think, 76 yards on 17 carries, pulling that off the top of my head. Nile had 3 carries, -4 yards.
-4.
Jonathan Williams had more carries. He had 6 carries in that game. Coaches trying to light a fire under Nile here. What's going on?
They need to.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's not – they're not getting
– He's too lateral.
They're not getting what we saw out of him in the preseason.
No, not that burst.
He looked, and I talked about this, and now I feel like such an idiot for saying this. You know, back when we were all talking about Heisman hopes and national championships.
Yeah.
And
feels like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, now we're talking BBVA Compass Bowl.
Or getting bowl eligible, more specifically.
But, you know, back early in the season, what we saw from Nile in preseason camp, granted he wasn't getting hit, which has been second-guessed to death, but he had a burst at the line of scrimmage. He was making great cuts and looked strong. Looked like he was running really strong. We don't see that from him now. For whatever reason, we're not seeing it. And I think they're trying to get him to run that way. They're trying to get him to run like he used to run because we haven't seen it. So, and it was clear, and listen, give credit to Paul Petrino and John L. Smith and this staff for going, you know what, kid, you don't have it today. Sorry, we're sticking you on the sidelines.
Well, just as a quick sidebar, I think this Auburn game was finally the time when the coaching staff looked themselves in the eye and said, you know what, we need to flip the script here because whatever we're doing is not working. You know, they put Petrino in the box, they sat Nile, ran Dennis. They've, you know, brought tons of pressure on defense. I think this is finally the time they got over that hump. But as far as the Dennis and Nile conversation, I'm not quite willing to say Dennis Johnson's a better running back than Nile Davis. I'm not there yet. But here's what I will say. Nile is the type of running back that has to run behind a strong offensive line. Dennis doesn't necessarily need that. He's better at making something out of nothing. And this is something Tyler talked about on Monday. You know, he wills you a couple of yards when there's nothing there. He always falls forward. Nile doesn't do that. You give Nile some room to run, he'll gash you up. He'll do a lot of damage. Dennis can just run through the slop. And he's not going to be necessarily breaking 60-yarders because he didn't. But he got 76 hard yards. You know, he had a couple of 15 to 20-yard runs. But other than that, he was just fighting through it and making the best of what was there. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, he can be running the best on the team right now and not necessarily be the best running back or the best pro prospect. I still think Nile, with his physical gifts, and
if they're still there, we're not seeing them. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, well, we saw them. We saw them all throughout camp. I don't know where they went.
There's a difference between seeing him burst off the line against practice and then slow up than running against real opponents and break. I mean, nobody. What's the longest run of the year by a running back? Is it even 30 yards?
No, it's
like 22 yards or something like that?
At one point it was Nile with, I think, a 19-yard run.
I want to say he got a 20-yard run in the A&M game.
Let's see.
But regardless, nobody's broken a run. Yeah, as long as 28 against A&M. So this line's not very good at the run blocking. They're not giving them a lot of room to operate, and I feel like Nile needs room. Dennis doesn't.
Yeah, you know, and Dennis is a guy that, he's a small back. He can fit in spaces and make moves where there really isn't a lot of room to operate. Nile's a big guy, and I don't think he's as shifty. And he's – Dennis also, although he's small, he's harder to bring down. He's harder to wrap up, the low center of gravity.
He's compact.
He's always keeping his feet moving and trying to churn out that extra yard.
You know what Dennis reminds me of? You ever seen like a little dog on a wood floor, like try and start running, and their first few steps they don't go anywhere? that's what his feet are always just moving like that.
Yeah, and he is perfect for the offensive line that they have right now.
Now I don't want to venture too far into this because this is pure speculation.
Okay.
Is Nile healthy? You think he's 100% the way he felt in 2010?
I don't know. I mean, he says he is. The coaches say that he is. You know how this goes. At the end of every football season, there's always one or two players when you go in with the head coach and you do the post-season news conference, and they're like, oh, by the way, Adam played the entire year with a strained earlobe.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So-and-so had a broken rib and toughed through it.
Yeah. Right. So would it surprise me if at the end of the year we find out that Nile had X wrong with him? No. In the meantime, I'm inclined to just think maybe mentally he's not there. We saw this with Greg Childs last year. Greg looked the part in practice.
Coaches said he felt good.
Coaches said he felt good. He said he felt good. And it wasn't until, week 10, 11, 12, the Cotton Bowl, that he really looked like Greg Childs.
I think the Cotton Bowl was about the only good game he had all year. But it was about that time when the coaches finally kind of started relenting that Greg wasn't Greg until the end there.
So this could be what's going on with Nile. He just – these things take time. And especially, I would think, for a guy who has been through so many of these, I just think it's going to take him some time. He doesn't have the offensive line. We tried to talk about this before the season. He didn't have the offensive line that he had in 2010. We've mentioned he doesn't have the quarterback with the arm that he had in Mallett when safeties were playing further back. There's just a lot of things that aren't the same for Nile right now that were there in 2010 when he had his great final half of the season. And that's why I was irritated as people got saying, how come people have better things to say about Marcus Lattimore than Nile Davis? That was the big question before in the preseason. Well, it's because we didn't have anything to go on with Nile. And right now we're not seeing a lot to go on with him.
Well, while we're speculating, how do you think the carries get divvied up Saturday against Kentucky? Who gets the first carry?
Jonathan Williams?
Oh, yeah. I'd be okay with that. I think Jonathan Williams is really good.
He's
gonna
be good.
Going to be great. I'm disappointed they didn't redshirt him. I don't know what they're getting out of him this year that was worth a year of eligibility. But kid's got great ability and potential.
Yeah, he does. Well, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I think he can help them this year, and certainly whoever the next coach is going to be glad to have a guy who's
absolutely start next year.
Yeah, battle tested. Will he be competing with Nile Davis for a starting spot next year?
I really doubt it.
I do
but
too.
Has anybody on this team's stock fell? Not a lot of guys had stock going in, but I mean his was could be a first rounder, and now he's going to be a sixth rounder.
Yeah, I'll be stunned if we see him back, though.
I will too.
I think it was a really difficult decision for him to come back this year, and I think his time in college is probably over after this year. So hopefully he's able to make the most of these final six games.
The more I think about it, I'm not even sure he'll get drafted based off of what we saw this year.
running back is such a difficult position now to get drafted. I mean, and the fact that Trent Richardson went in the first round last year is pretty remarkable, because you're starting to see teams getting away from first or second round, you know, draft picks with
running
backs.
There's a lot of third round starters in this, in the NFL.
Yep. So yeah, Niles gonna have a long way to go, but maybe he'll show us something over the final half.
Well, the Hogs better hope he's not injured. I'm sure they already know, but they can't afford any more injuries. I mean, you know, we've both been covering football for a long time. This is the most injuries on one team I think I've ever covered. I mean, at significant positions, too.
It's wild. They've got 10 guys who have missed at least one game. 9 of those are starters. And you could essentially say all 10, because Cody Walker went down after Kiro Small did. So 10 guys on this team are starters, or maybe – I can't remember the timeline. Anyway, a whole stinking lot of injuries. And then you've got a ton of these guys who have missed multiple games. Now you've got Small, Walker, Alonzo Highsmith, Tenarius Wright, all done for the season. Tevin Mitchell has missed four games. I've never seen anything quite like this. And you know, good for Paul Petrino and John L. for saying injuries happen and you just got to have the next guy ready. But my goodness.
I thought it was funny on Tuesday. You know, Paul said, "Cause you just don't want to answer your phone this year because
yeah.
You just know something bad's coming." But I don't think injuries are the reason they've struggled so much. But, boy, it is not helping. I mean, you're already making this team go up the mountain, not down it. And when you want to just keep taking resources away, that climb gets harder and harder and harder.
Yeah, I mean, because you were already at a disadvantage against Alabama.
Yeah, just physically.
Physically, you know, LSU to come, A&M. You were going to be outmatched.
South
probably.
Carolina looks ferocious. Has anybody made a bolder statement all season than what they did to Georgia, just annihilating them?
I don't know. I'm what Oregon did, wasn't Washington in the top 25? Well, this was a top 10 matchup, though. Yeah, I don't think we've seen. No, we haven't seen a bigger statement. Although. Weren't we probably overrating Georgia just a smidge?
Yeah.
That was my takeaway, is we probably overvalued Georgia.
Yeah, but if we're overvaluing, what were they ranked, like 6th? I mean, they're still probably one of the best 15 teams in the country, maybe 20.
Yeah.
I mean, and Carolina didn't just beat them. I mean, it was 21-0 at the blink of an eye. Smashed them.
Yeah. No, they did. It's impressive. And look – I think if Carolina – they have to win the league, okay? They can't just make the SEC championship game.
They've got a tough schedule the rest of the way.
And it's not easy. But if Carolina wins the league, if they beat Bama or whoever in the SEC championship game, we have got to restart Steve Spurrier as the best coach in college football conversation.
Has anybody changed his style? Adapted better than Spurrier. I mean, this isn't anything close to what he did at Florida.
Yep.
They threw the ball, I think, 10 times total against Georgia? I mean, Steve Spurrier in 1996 would have laughed in your face if you told him he would be doing that.
It's remarkable. It is absolutely remarkable. I think there are three guys in the game right now. Saban at Alabama. Bill Snyder at Kansas State.
Oh, Snyder's fantastic.
And Spurrier. I think they're the three best coaches in the game.
It's really hard to argue with that.
And what Spurrier has done it's remarkable. To change the style and to reinvent himself. You know, it's kind of like what we were talking about with Tyler in the Auburn game, kind of reinvented how he was approaching the game. And Spurrier has done that with his entire coaching philosophy. And it's remarkable.
I find myself on weekends now searching for the Carolina game because that's a team I enjoy watching. I mean, they just play football in such a hard-nosed way. And, oh, God, keep your eyes on number seven at all times. Jadeveon Clowney is
good
just
Lord.
A monster.
Yeah.
And he was the number one recruit in the country when he comes out. But we've seen plenty of those guys not do anything impressive in college or the pros. This guy is every bit what he was cracked up to be.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. Tune in just to watch him.
I mean, just watch Carolina play defense. Keep your eye on number seven. And it's tremendous.
It's not often that we're going to get this excited about a defensive lineman, but good night.
Yeah, I mean, he's got one more year before he's draft eligible, and then he'll be probably a top three pick in the NFL draft in 2014. But we're off topic here. I mean, Carolina, you got something else?
No, I was just – how did we even get here?
I don't remember, but Carolina, like we mentioned, does have a tough schedule the rest of the way to try and win out there at LSU this weekend. They still have to play Florida, and then – assuming they get there, the SEC championship game. But let's talk about Arkansas' schedule, because with this win, it gets them to 2, and there are 6 games left. You got to win 4 of 6 to get bowl eligible. 3 of them are very winnable games. Kentucky, Tulsa, Ole Miss, all at home. I'm not going to sit here right now and tell you Arkansas will win all those games, but they probably should be favored in all those games. That means to even get bowl eligible, you got to steal one, either in Starkville, in Columbia, or against LSU Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
How much confidence do you have in the Razorbacks to do that?
None. I mean, sorry, none. Just look, Carolina 6-0. I'm terrible at math, so bear with me here. Carolina 6-0. Mississippi State's 5-0. LSU's 5-1, so that is 16-1 is the combined record of the 3 final opponents, and you're at Carolina, at Mississippi State.
Yeah.
If there were a game over the last 3 weeks that I was going to pick as a potential upset, it's LSU at home.
I'm not sure I disagree, because – I think LSU's probably better than Mississippi State, but it's in Starkville. Arkansas historically doesn't play that well in Starkville. You know, just thinking back to the last time they went in 2010, they won that game. They should have lost that game. Mississippi State played Arkansas better than anybody played the Hogs all year. LSU, of course, has a good defense. You know, the Tigers always have a good defense, but that offense is pretty darn anemic. I mean, it's in Auburn territory. You know, if they get to the point where they're 5-6 going into that week, it'll be a lot like the 2008 LSU game in War Memorial when, you know, Miracle on Markham Part 2. It didn't get them bowl eligible, but it sure just gave them a great way to end the season and go into the offseason and help them in recruiting. Bobby Petrino talked about that so much, how that win helped them recruit going forward. It'll be fascinating going into that game what the scenario looks like.
I think it's a very good chance that Arkansas's 5-6 going into that game, playing for a shot at Birmingham, Shreveport, or maybe Memphis.
Let's also be real here. 6-6 doesn't guarantee you a bowl. It gets you bowl eligible. There's a difference.
Yeah, but the SEC's got so many bowl tie-ins. And we know Auburn ain't going to a bowl.
No. Ole Miss is not going to a bowl.
Missouri.
Kentucky, Vanderbilt.
Kentucky.
Missouri. Yeah, none of them are going to bowls.
So if Arkansas can get to 6-6, I think they get to a bowl. But, I also, again, think we're getting – we can have this conversation because they beat Auburn, but I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
Bottom line, they have to beat Kentucky, Tulsa, Ole Miss, all three of them. Because I'm pretty much with you, giving them about 0 chance to win one of those last 3. I'm giving them negative 100% chance to win 2. Is that a number? Is that like the square root of negative 1 is I? Is that an imaginary number?
I took a couple algebra classes and then I bailed. You're starting to get into like calculus or something. I can't do this.
Math was actually always my best subject.
I
can't do it at all now.
I couldn't even in a reasonable amount of time add 6 plus 5 plus 5. And you're pulling out pi and negative square
roots?
Let's
talk about related rates and quadratic equations. No, let's not. All right, so we're pretty much in agreement there.
Math is the Beach Boys of subjects.
Oh, stop it. You stop it. Good vibrations. Speaking of, I guess it's about that time. I think it's your turn. You're putting me on the spot. Here we go.
All right. I want to know, and anybody that's ever met you, I'm sure would never doubt any sort of athletic achievement that you've had in your life. But I would like
to
know.
Where are you going with this?
I would like to know, and it could be beyond athletics, but athletically or otherwise, what's one accomplishment that you have had that if you told a stranger, they would just look at you and be like, "No, you didn't. Stop."
Does marrying my wife count?
Yes. Yeah, we could both.
I mean, I outkicked my coverage a little bit there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not even like a really difficult hole in one at the miniature golf course.
I do own one state championship ring. I was part of a state championship baseball team in high school, but I wasn't a starter. I was a backup. I mean, I played some.
Okay.
I was a hell of a JV player, I'll tell you that much.
What position did you play?
I played a lot of positions. I played mostly outfield growing up, and then when I was a junior in high school, I moved to the infield. I played third base, and then senior year I also played a little bit of second base.
Okay.
I really like third
base. Utility man.
Yeah, I can kind of do it all. I actually have played every single position in a game except catcher at one point in my life.
I think that would be miserable, by the way.
Catcher?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no desire to play catcher. And the only time I ever pitched was like in middle school. We were playing one of those tournaments. It was like the fourth game of the day, and we were totally out of pitchers, and we were getting our butts kicked. And it was just like, who has an arm that isn't dead? And I faced like three batters. It was like 19-2 when I got in there.
They were like, that guy's
like three batters, and they just called the game.
That guy's been sitting there doing nothing. Put him in.
I think like I walked a guy, and then another guy got like a bloop single, and they were like, you know, that's just why are we wasting our time? Game over here. I don't know. I don't know that I have a good answer off the top
of
my
head. All right, keep thinking. If I told you that one time in a basketball game, non-sanctioned, but basketball game, competitive basketball game, I had a two-handed dunk.
Would I believe that? Yes. Absolutely not.
I did.
What height of rim are we discussing?
No, standard height.
10 feet.
10 feet,
You cannot walk onto the Bud Walton Arena floor and dunk the ball.
I can't now. I'm 35 years
old.
You
couldn't at 25
years
old.
Yes, I could.
How tall are you?
6'1".
So you're telling me you had enough of a vertical to dunk a basketball?
I'm telling you I had enough of a vertical at one point in time to consistently dunk.
With two hands?
A volleyball.
With two hands?
Then one day at the in a pickup game at the Y, I came down, I was falling on fast break, a guy missed a layup, it came off the rim, and I found myself two hands above the rim, flushed it. It pandelirium.
That's not a word.
It is a word.
Pandemonium.
It's not a word, but I'm gonna use it in a word. I'm gonna use it in a sentence. That's a great word.
I'm calling shenanigans on this story.
Pandelirium.
Is there video
broke
evidence?
Out. Now this was before video cell phones. You just have to believe me.
Video
Trust me,
cameras have been around a long time.
No, this was...
You mean your pops wasn't there with the camera? How old were you?
I would have been 20, 19, 20. So, I mean, this was many,
college?
Many years ago. Yeah. Peak physical condition, two-handed dunk, off the follow. They just called the game. No one could believe it. No one could focus on the rest of the game. They
this
just called the game.
This story is full of bogosity while we're making up words here.
No, it's true.
Bogusness.
It's true. It happened. It was just down the street from my house. I used to walk into the Y and play pickup games.
You dunked a basketball
with two hands
in a game. Did
a
you hang
regulation
on the rim?
Basketball.
Did you roar like Charles Barkley?
I was a little surprised to be up there. To be honest with you.
Can you touch the rim right now?
Ooh, maybe not. We'll try it here in a minute. We have a basketball goal handy. Yeah. I could probably get three-quarters of the way up the net now.
I'd be happy if I could just go touch the net right now.
Yeah, two-handed.
Boy, this sounds flimsy, Chris.
Okay. I mean, believe it or don't believe it. That was the whole point of this, is what, like, what's one thing that people wouldn't believe?
No, you're right. I mean, that was the subject you brought up. But I wish I had a better answer for you. Nothing's really coming to mind.
That's okay. Really, this was all set up for me to tell you that I once dunked two-handed in a game. I didn't really care.
Yeah, you were just looking for a reason to get that story out.
I didn't care what your answer was.
Yeah, I see what you're doing. All right, let's wrap things up.
All right.
I don't know. You have any homework? I don't have any homework. I'm too tired to give them homework.
You know what? Everyone should, if you don't own it, you should at the very least listen to the Jimi Hendrix Blues album. It's fantastic. It's one of my favorite albums ever. And I will sometimes just listen to that for weeks on end. That and nothing else. I'm really weird, though. So.
And when in doubt, listen to the Beatles or Led Zeppelin. That's my homework for you.
Wow.
All right, parting thoughts.
No, I mean, hopefully we can have another exciting issue, episode. What is this? Episode of
edition,
the show.
Episode?
Yeah, edition, whatever. Yeah, hopefully we'll have another optimistic edition next week. I would definitely pick Arkansas over Kentucky, although 18, 19 points seems a little.
Is that what the line is?
Yeah, it's like 18.
Somebody spotting this Razorback team 18 points?
Do you know that Vegas has not been within 21 points of the Arkansas line all season?
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, I guess my kind of final thought here is, assuming they win this weekend and then go into their bye week and kind of get healthy a little bit, it'll really put a different perspective on this stretch run, because like we've talked about, it all kind of boils down to those last three games. A win this weekend plus the bye propels them into the Tulsa and Ole Miss games. So Arkansas needs to win this weekend. That's kind of the bottom line. All righty, what's coming up on Arkansas Sports 360?
We will have the game coverage from Arkansas-Kentucky, obviously previews. Doc Harper has Saturday Roulette. He can give you all kinds of advice on how to make money, although I don't think he's making much money this year. But ignore that. Read his gambling advice. Just the usual. What about Razorback Nation? What are you guys doing on your 47 different channels?
We continue our epic coverage. Of course, gear up for game day, 10:15 Friday night. Game day show is at 11 a.m. this week. That thing keeps moving around depending on the Hogs game. 11 a.m. on KNWAKARK. We'll be live out at the stadium. For anybody that remembers Pat Doney, he now works in Louisville and covers Kentucky. He'll be in town. He's going to be on our show, a little Razorback Nation reunion.
Ask him about Charlie Strong, maybe?
I imagine that might come up, but let's not venture into that right now. So, of course, stick with Razorback Nation for all the best TV coverage you will find in the state. As we finish up here, Chris, you want to share a Matt Turner thought with the folks? I mean, this has been a tough week for all of us in the media, especially those of us that work for KNWA or THV in Little Rock that knew Matt well. Chris?
Yeah, I mean, Matt was just a tremendous professional in the business. It's amazing. He was a lead news anchor at 26 years old. He recently started working for THV in Little Rock. We partner with THV. Matt and I had just worked on a story together a couple weeks ago, and I remember sending an email to my editors and saying, this is how a partnership is supposed to work, because it was so seamless. He had a great idea. I was able to turn it into a column, and we worked really well together. But the thing beyond all that, I respected him as a newsman, but as a person, man, he was just a tremendous person, really knew the value of family and people, and just, you know, fortunate to have gotten a chance to work with him and interact with him.
I think what I'll never forget about Matt Turner is just his passion. Whenever there was a big story, particularly in sports, because, you know, he started in sports before transitioning over to the news side, boy, nobody's blood would run hotter than Matt Turner during a coaching search or a whatever that was a big sports story. I mean, he'd come over to the sports area all the time, at least once a week. Adam, what's going on with this? I'm hearing something about this. And a lot of times it was like, nothing, Matt. Just calm down. There's nothing to this. But every once in a while, you know, he'd be out front and he had his finger on the pulse, and he loved sports. He loved TV. But he loved his family most of all, and that's who I've been thinking about all week is Julian Presley and and just how unfair it is that Presley won't have any memories of her father growing up.
Yeah, it's really awful. I guess the good said, maybe good isn't the word, but you know, Matt left behind notes and was really good at kind of making sure Presley knew how much her dad loved her before this happened. Matt had some health issues and, you know, was just kind of had planned ahead. And so she'll get a chance to know her dad, just not, you know, in person. But he definitely loved his little girl.
And thankfully we have all this TV footage of Matt in his prime, you know, on television. And I'm sure somebody will put together a great compilation of that Presley and Julie can keep forever. Well, I think we'd like to dedicate this edition of the show, Graham, in Matt Turner's honor. I'm not going to have any bump music out today. We'll just end it with some silence. So here's to Matt Turner, wherever you are, and to the Turner family. Thanks for listening, everybody.